Good morning and welcome. You're listening to Jump In Tucson on 1030 KBOI The Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and this hour is called the Engagement Hour. Why? Because the purpose of this hour is to try to get you involved. As citizens of this great nation, we've got responsibilities to support our community, be informed voters, but there's also things we can do by taking our time, talent, or treasure and getting involved. All you need is one of those, and you can make this a better place. Today, I'm very honored to have somebody who is a Tucsonan and who has lived his life in service towards making this a better community. Today, I'm going to have with me Michael Guymon, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. Michael, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Ted. Thank you. The honor is really mine, quite frankly.
Well, the fact of the matter is, I'll ask you that question when you're done. So we don't know yet. Michael's got a long career of involvement and activity in both the business advocacy roles and the community advocacy roles and in public service. So I'm going to kind of start, Michael. I want to talk about how you got involved. Now, a lot of things people don't know about you unless they've seen some of the pictures of you on your old skateboard gear from
right,
high school and stuff.
Yeah,
but you did grow up and go to high school in Tucson. Can you give us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I was born at University Medical Center before Banner was there, and really, grew up midtown, grew up in the foothills. I went to Orange Grove Middle School. I went to CDO. I actually would have been able to walk to Catalina Foothills High School, but it wasn't built yet. So took the hour-long bus ride to CDO and ultimately graduated in 91. And from, what's interesting, Ted, is in high school, I actually learned quite a bit about how to get involved and why it's important to get involved. A buddy of mine and I co-created the Teenage Republicans at CDO, and because it didn't exist before. Now, the funny thing is that friend who I co-created that with is very far from a Republican these days. But the two of us started that that endeavor, and then carried on from there. When I went off into college at the University of Arizona, I volunteered for the 92, 94, and 96 Colby campaigns. So I was a regular at those campaigns, whether it was collecting signatures or phone banking. I mean, you name it, I was there pretty much the entire time those summers doing the work that needed to be done for that campaign.
Well, that makes sense why you obtained a political science degree from the University of Arizona.
Correct.
I always like the show because I bring in people I think I know fairly well quite often, but I always learn something new. And yes, you are now the president and CEO of the Metro Chamber of Commerce, but I didn't know that's where you actually started.
It did. Yeah, I've gone really far in life, Ted. I started the chamber, 25 years ago. Now I'm back at the chamber, obviously in very different roles. But yeah, so I also interned for then Governor Symington when he was in office, and the Southern Arizona director of the Department of Commerce was in that office during that time that I was there. And she came up to me one day and she said, "Hey, I know you're graduating soon. You're probably looking for some opportunities, and there's an opportunity that is opening up at the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. Might you be interested?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty interesting, a local lobbying job." And so I applied for it, and I got it, and I ended up working there for a year. It was the year of 1997.
And as with all journeys, they never take a straight line. So it wasn't like you started at the chamber and you finished the chamber. There were some other events. And the first job you had after the chamber was actually a step into the political world.
That's right. Yeah. So we, at that time, the chamber endorsed candidates, and that was a city council election year, 1997. And so we interviewed all the candidates running for city council. And one of those candidates was Fred Ronstadt. We ended up endorsing him. And I got a call from a good friend of mine who actually at the time was the executive director of TRWC, Tucson Regional Water Coalition. And she ultimately became a council member. So some of you out there can probably guess who it is. But she called me at that time and said, "Hey, Fred just got elected. I was a council aide, you should think about doing that. It's a great job, and it, you know, opens a lot of doors. And so, you know, I called Fred and I congratulated him, and I said, hey, I want to meet for breakfast, talk about the chamber, things that we do, things that we can assist you with. And at the end of that breakfast, which was at IHOP on Grant, I handed him my resume and I said, you know, I was told that this might be a good position. Here's my resume. I'm interested in becoming one of your aides. And he ultimately hired me.
So what was the biggest lesson you learned or disappointment that you learned when you found out after being involved, studying poli-sci, starting a committee in high school about how the real world and politics works?
I will tell you exactly what that lesson is, Ted. That lesson is that you start a thing called like teenage Republicans. You get involved on the Republican side. What you learn in a position like that is the world is much bigger than that. What we learned very, very quickly, because, you know, Fred hired me because he wanted that business perspective. He felt that was missing from a lot of the conversations in the city of Tucson. And so he brought me in to be that sort of business voice and that connection to the business community. But what you learn very quickly is, yeah, there's that connection, but in neighborhoods have a big voice. And we worked very hard to provide that balance between wanting to make sure the business had a voice, but also recognizing that we have these established neighborhood associations, and they were very involved. I mean, one of the biggest projects we worked on was the Elkhorn rezoning, which was, 16 months of my life I'll never get back. But it was a lot of meetings. It was a lot of conversation. There was a lot of back and forth. But, at the end of the day, what we tried to do was again, try to make sure that a business endeavor could move forward, but also do it in a way that met some of the needs and some of the concerns of the area residents.
Well, that's the voice of Michael Guymon, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. And we're going to leave it there because you did that job position for a little while, and then you stepped back into the advocacy world. And we'll talk about how you got to the Metro Chamber and what the great things you're doing there are. So you're listening to KVOI 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk, and this is Jump in Tucson. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and my guest today on 1030 The Voice is Michael Guymon, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, which I've learned it's a kind of a balance for the chamber. It's between Chandler's Chamber of Commerce and Tucson Chamber of Commerce, which one's the second largest in the state.
Right.
Yeah. So it's in your time there, I know you've grown the membership and there's some great things going on, but we'll get to that because I want to just let everybody know that your line from the chamber wasn't straight from being a council aide or a chief of staff or a city council member, but you went back into advocacy initially with the Metropolitan Pima
Alliance.
You give it to me. There,
yeah,
it
Metropolitan Pima Alliance. You
MPA.
Bet. MPA.
Just drew a blank on MPA. Sorry, Allison. But the MPA, and then you went and worked for Sun Corridor in economic development. So going from an advocacy position into that economic development position, what were the similarities and what were kind of the differences on those two roles?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Ted, because when Sun Corridor approached me, I had done some events, obviously, for MPA. I brought in David Welsh, who still is at Sun Corridor today. At the time, it was TRIO, Tucson Regional Economic Opportunities. But I had brought in David Welsh. We actually sat on a committee together that was looking into impact fees for the city of Tucson. I brought him in to come speak at one of the wild rides for MPA. So we got to know each other pretty well through those processes. But he had called me at one point in time and said, would you be interested in joining our team? And I said, well, I haven't done economic development. It's all been policy. And he said, well, you know what's important about running an organization. You know what's important about policy. Those things really blend into the types of things that we're doing then at TRIO. And I said, you know what? That actually sounds very interesting. But there was a big difference, because it's transitioning from policy and so some of the similarities is with policy, as you know, there are times when you have to really negotiate. Same thing exists in the economic development world, except you're negotiating your community with a company. So you're sitting down with a company and understanding what is important to that company, whether it's talent, whether it's land, whether it's cost of living, whether it's quality of life issues. So understanding what is important is probably not too dissimilar from sitting down with an elected official or a city official to say, hey, you know, we want to figure this out. Here's what is important to us. We want to understand what is important to you and try to find that common ground. So there are some similarities, but of course the big difference is you're working with multinational, or you're working with site selectors, you're working with multinational executives that have played this game pretty successfully over the years. And then you're just trying to pitch your community as best you can to try to land that project.
And as we talk about a lot now, obviously, I think most listeners know I'm the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, which is a pure public policy organization. Now you're back at the chamber, more into the policy, particularly local issues. A lot of times the challenge for the economic development community in this town is we're selling the table that we've set. It's the policy that creates the environment, the communities, and of course the people and the workforce. And you have to sell what you have. It's not like you can overnight, unless you get a lot of support on the policies and from the electeds, make significant changes. So you're doing that at some corridor.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, Ted. So what you and I kind of have to do every day, and the something that I really carried forward from Sun Corridor, is waking up every day trying to answer the question, how does our region bolster our competitiveness? And so obviously those conversations that I had with site selectors and company executives really landed on the things that make our community competitive. And then from a policy perspective, you and I can collaborate on how to improve talent, access to talent, improve our roads, improve the quality of life, improve land development options. So there are things that we can focus on that can help a Sun Corridor to do a better job selling our community. Because once they come here and they understand that we are either tackling these issues, solving these issues, or collectively working on these issues, then they have a better sense and feeling of the types of things that we are doing to bolster our competitiveness.
So after almost 8 years with Sun Corridor, you went back to the chamber. What was the driving reason and what was it that attracted you to come back and rejoin where your career had started?
Yeah, part of it was personal. Part of it was a desire to get back into pure policy work. So the personal aspect of it was, when I was at MPA, I needed to hire a public policy director, and I hired Amber Smith. And the 2 years that we worked together at MPA were just magical. I mean, she and I worked so extremely well together. You know, almost to the point where we're either finishing each other's sentences, or we're saying, man, we're doing such fun things. You know, how can we continue to solve all the world's problems? I then, of course, then went up to Sun Corridor. She became the executive director of MPA. But then when she became the CEO of the chamber, we then had the conversation, how do we get back to working with one another? And so that was part of the driving force, but it was also really a desire to get back into that policy work that the chamber really helps to provide.
So now you've been in the role for 2.5-3 years almost?
I've been a CEO for, 2.5 years.
2.5 years. So what, in that role, what has gotten you most excited, and what are the changes that you've implemented at the chamber to make your organization more effective in that public policy sphere?
Yeah, so the biggest change that I made when I became CEO was to focus purely on local issues. There was a point in time, actually, for a lot of the chamber's life, there was an employee who would spend 3 days out of the week during the legislative session up at the legislature. And while that's fine, I think that there are best and more effective and more impactful uses of our time, especially given the partnership that we have with you at SCLC, because I know you spend a lot of time up at Capitol focused on those issues, learning about those issues, lobbying on behalf of the community. So there are partnerships that we can create between your organization, between our colleagues up at the Phoenix Chamber, the Arizona Chamber, where we can still have that voice, but it's not having an employee spend 3 days a week up at the Capitol. So I pulled that back, and our advocacy team is purely focused on local issues. The city of Tucson, Pima County, Pima Community College Governing Board, which is an area that we've gotten much more involved with, and Rio Nuevo. I mean, these are issues that we've focused on after that change to just purely local advocacy.
Well, we've talked about it before. I appreciate it. I think, being the Tucson Metro Chamber, local is where your expertise and your advocacy should be. But I want everybody to understand that doesn't mean you don't play at the state.
Correct.
Because when there are issues, Michael and I joke a lot about, when it's time to bring the Army, that's when you call the chamber. Your size, your diversity of business members within your organization, and your voice. A lot of people criticize us in this community for having so many different business organizations, MPA, Suncord, or SALC, Tucson Metro Chamber, a lot of other metro chambers, all the municipalities have chambers.
Yep.
The transportation builders, we've got the housing entities. We have to. We're Tucson. We're not Maricopa. There's not 27 cities inside of Tucson who are all willing to go to the bat and advocate up at the legislature. And so we need as many entities as we can here trying to make better policy and a better place to do business.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Ted, because sometimes you probably get this. I certainly hear this. Boy, wouldn't it be better if all these chambers just were under one roof? It's like, not necessarily. Each chamber provides a different value proposition to its members. More of the local chambers provide that pure networking and a connection aspect that a chamber really provides within its community, and members appreciate that. So they want that. But at the same time, what we can do, and there's also strength in numbers too. I mean, if you had everything under one roof, then that's really just one organization fighting for this or that. It's a whole lot different. It's a different ballgame when you have a number of organizations fighting for and on the same page on a particular policy issue.
It's also only one voice of the legislature. So since you've been back, you've created a coalition of chambers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So we did establish in March of last year the Chamber Alliance of Southern Arizona, or CASA. And so it's the 10, it's currently made up of 10 chambers. It's all the regional chambers here in the Tucson region, including the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. But we also have Sierra Vista, which recently changed their name to the Sky Islands Regional Partnership. We have Nogales, and we have the Graham County Chamber. We're looking to bring in potentially Yuma and some of the other communities here in Southern Arizona. But as it currently exists, it's 10 chambers that are focused on issues that are regional in nature. And a lot of those issues are either federal or statewide issues. Some of the things we've already weighed in as CASA was the Lukeville Port of Entry. The closing of that temporary closing of that. So we weighed in pretty heavily on that. And we also weighed in collectively on the Arizona Commerce Authority, making sure that that Commerce Authority is reauthorized.
And when you say you weigh in as CASA, it's you still sign in on those things as individual entities at the state, but you're also letting them know it can be a single letter with all the partners on it, or
that's exactly right. The letter that we sent to the legislators, the letter that we sent to the federal delegation on those two particular issues, included all of our chambers on that letterhead.
Well, we haven't gotten to any of the issues yet. So when we come back from this break, we're going to start talking issues, the things that are important to the Tucson Metro Chamber and important to our community. That's Michael Guyman, who will be with me on the flip side, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. You're listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, and we'll see you in a couple minutes. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KBOI 1030 The Voice. I hope you tune in tomorrow morning and wake up with Christy Simone. And then after that, join Jump in Tucson with Grant Krueger. Today, I've had the pleasure so far to kind of talk on the easy stuff with Michael Guyman, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, and we're going to jump into some of the issues now. And as we do this, if we can talk also, Michael, about how people can get involved or if they've got interest in some of these, because we're going to try to cover quite a few. There's been a couple entities inside the chamber you've set up to focus on specific issues, and one of them's your CART program. And can you talk about what they're doing and what you're focused on? I know it's retail theft and where you think that the community can also get engaged.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ted. So our Coalition Against Retail Theft, that's another thing that I changed right off the bat. So as I changed the chamber into more locally focused, I was hearing from our members that retail theft was on the rise. And so I thought, well, let's reestablish the Coalition Against Retail Theft and set up meetings that would bring in our members who are experiencing these. So, you know, big box retailers all the way down to, believe it or not, Evergreen Mortuary is a part of these discussions. And I don't even want to tell you what happens at Evergreen Mortuary from a retail theft perspective. But all of those individuals involved, but the other individual that show up to every meeting are the Sheriff's Department, our TPD, our Laura Conover's office, the county attorney. So all of those individuals show up because our goal is to discuss these issues and try to figure out solutions, whether it's on the law enforcement side or the prosecutorial side, to address the concerns that our members have.
Can you kind of talk about some of the what you have accomplished with that CART at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we've established with the county attorney's office, and there's still some work that we have to do with this, but there has been an emphasis, a greater emphasis on prosecuting these cases. And ultimately, we're going to have to either take some, you know, legislation to the state or make some modifications locally to address some of these on the prosecution side. You know, the law enforcement side, a lot of organizations have sort of beat the drum on we need more officers. And as it currently exists, the police department does have the ability to hire more officers. But you can't just flip that switch, right? Not only does it take time to hire officers, but quite frankly, there's less of an interest in our younger generation to become a police officer or Border Patrol or you name it. And so that becomes challenging as well. But these are the conversations that we're having to try to figure out how we can get the department into the schools to demonstrate, you know, this is what this looks like, this profession looks like, this is what this career track looks like. So these are the conversations that we're having to try to not only bolster that, but also make some other modifications that we need to make sure that these cases are prosecuted.
Now, if there are business leaders and business owners out there listening who are interested in any of these topics we are going to cover today, they can join the chamber.
They can, absolutely.
Then I'm sure you've got a team that will help them make it as easy as possible. What's the best way for somebody to contact you if they're interested in joining?
Yeah, the best way is just to go to our website, tucsonchamber.org. We have all the information there, whether it relates to all the committees that we have, the advocacy work that we do, the events that we put on. All of that is there, but also you can book a meeting right there or on our website with either our vice president of members services, Kerry Gilchrist, or David Bowers, our regional partnership specialist. The two of them can answer any question that you would have of joining the chamber. And then you are placed on our committees and you are a part of our work to develop solutions that we need for our community.
Well, there's a lot of restaurants and restaurateurs in this region as well, small, large, you know, mom and pops, all the way to some chains. And you've set up a committee similar to CART to focus on the restaurant issues in the region. Can you talk about that?
That's right. That actually happened right after the pandemic. And so we created a program called Keep Tucson Cooking. And it was designed to get individuals throughout the community right after the pandemic happened. I mean, it was May of 2020 that we started this campaign to get people to take out. I mean, similar to what a lot of other communities were doing, to put a focus on helping to maintain and save our restaurants, right? So take out, still go to your restaurant, you know, get food delivered, you name it. But that then morphed into the policy conversation because Pima County at that time was looking to implement a proclamation that the aspects of it went above and beyond what the governor did through his executive order. And many of those elements of that proclamation were more damaging potentially to restaurants and hospitality. And so we actually went in and negotiated some of those features down or out of that proclamation. And that then really jump-started the conversations, created our Tucson Restaurant Advisory Council. And to this day, we still work on policy issues. And one of the big policy issues that has come up recently is this One Fair Wage Initiative, which would eliminate the tip credit. And it would be devastating to restaurants. And this is why, as part of these discussions, there's also been support of a current bill that's in the legislature that would somewhat preempt or set into statute the tipped credit that would kind of be permanent into the statutes so the restaurants could still apply that to their servers.
So this is an interesting issue because You've talked about the One Fair Wage Initiative. Can you explain what that is? Because it's an initiative that will end up on the ballot.
Possibly.
If they collect enough signatures.
That's correct. They're currently collecting signatures, and we hear that they're having some challenge collecting the signatures that they need to get it on the ballot.
That's why it's important to ask, when somebody asks for your signature, what you're signing
about. That's exactly right. But, yeah, essentially it would eliminate the tip credit. And right now, what the restaurants are telling us is that when they talk to their servers about, okay, if we eliminate this, this is how it might affect your wage and your ability to collect tips. It would act right now. Some restaurants are telling us servers are making, some servers, if they're really good, are making six figures annually. This would dramatically affect their ability to make that, still make that, because, you know, the restaurant industry is still a service provider. And in this country, we have decided that providing tips based on the level of service is an accepted practice. And so this elimination of the tip credit would dramatically affect that in a negative way.
And I think what some people talking to and some of the restaurateurs who are part of SALC, we in this country, tipping is, it's what we do.
It's what we do.
A lot of foreigners travel here and they don't understand it.
That's
don't understand
right.
How we tip. But it's always been a process, and there's always been a tip credit, which basically means servers who are collecting a tip pool are being paid a couple dollars less versus the folks that are working in the back end or the managers it's been an allowed process. So it's actually below the minimum wage, but they're making significantly more than the minimum wage because we tip.
That's right.
And what this will do is add to the costs, and tipping may not go away. It may have an impact because I think people are going to see the prices getting so high. There will be discussions about the fact that now all the pays level. And it's a challenge because it's so embedded in our system.
That's right. And thank you for bringing up that point, Ted, because as these costs increased, then your prices will increase. And that could affect whether or not you decide as a consumer to make that meal at home or go out to eat.
Absolutely. So that's Michael Guyman, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber. We've been talking about the issues that are facing our business community and our community at large. When we get back, we're going to take a shift and talk about some issues that are regional significant, not just in the city, but impacting entire Pima County. You've been listening to Jump In Tucson on KVOI 1030 The Voice, and we'll be back talking to you after the break. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to Jump In Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. My guest today is Michael Guyman with the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. We've been talking about a lot of local issues. We're going to get into a couple regional issues. And speaking of regional issues, on Thursday, it's going to be a new effort for Jump In Tucson. Tom Moulton is going to take his show on the road, and he's going to be broadcasting from the Pima County Fair. So you're going to be, he's going to be talking to folks serving the food, folks running the attractions, folks out there, whoever he can find, he's going to talk live out at the Pima County Fair. So I encourage you to listen to that one. So Michael, one issue that we both have been weighing in on with our organizations that's maybe not as, you know, sexy as some of the things we talk about, if people think anything we talk about sexy, is the outdoor lighting code. And there's a process going on right now to, this region's proud of the dark skies. We've pushed for, you know, people yes. keep it, but there's an issue going on right now in that space. Can you take just a minute or two to talk about that?
Yeah, Ted, I've learned more about lumens than I ever thought I would in my entire life. But
and that's what I love about the chamber. They're going to delve into lumens, and we've just kept it. What's the big picture issue? So
that's right. Foot candles. I mean, it's this. There's a whole litany of terms that we could talk about, but we're going to just graze the surface here. So the outdoor lighting code, it hasn't been updated in the last 12 years. There has been a lot of technology change in the in how lights are broadcast, shielded, all of that kind of LEDs. I mean, LEDs didn't really exist much 12 years ago. Now they do. But this is important for the business community because businesses need to advertise at night. Businesses need to keep their places safe at night. And a good outdoor lighting code would allow them to do that while also balancing what you're talking about, which is making sure that we keep our night skies dark. So again, LEDs can be shielded. The light can be directed out, not up. We can make sure that when businesses are putting in lighting that it's face down, but at the end of the day, the businesses need to have that so that they can continue to thrive, whether it's from a safety perspective or from an advertising perspective.
And I think the safety side's a big picture of it. There are businesses that have deliveries that occur all throughout the night. There are employees who are coming and going all throughout the night. And
that's right.
There is a moratorium in there that to shut off basically all outdoor lighting. And that's not only dangerous, it's unsafe, and it's not taking care of your employees. So from the business perspective, I agree. This is a big issue, and it's one we've got to be aware of because right now we're already known for dark skies. So now we're trying to take it down even more. I mean, in the long run, we don't want to risk the dark skies, but at the same time, we have to make sure the people, the employees, the citizens of the region are also being protected.
That's right. And so this is going through the process right now. Comments were due on April 12th, but that was really just the initial comment period. There will be a public hearing in front of the Tucson Pima County Outdoor Lighting Code Committee in the near future. And so we are going to be very active in that, and then it'll ultimately get to mayor and council. But yes, our position is to make sure that we strike that balance to make sure that our businesses can have access to lighting that helps them advertise and to keep them safe.
And this is one of those regional issues because Pima County is also considering to adopting the changes, and sometimes one of the communities, either the city of Tucson or the county, gets out in front on policy and the other one ends up following to keep it consistent. So
That's correct. It's
an important thing. Speaking of plans, every municipality has a 10-year plan that they put together. And Plan Tucson is currently going through its process. Pima Prospers is out there, and some of the other communities. I know Oro Valley, where I live, is also doing a plan. I think it's Oro Valley Forward. It's not sure the name. But how does that play into the policy space and what are the future of our communities are?
Yeah, so again, this is also going through its process. And according to the current timeline, the both would potentially be adopted by Pima County and City of Tucson. So the City of Tucson is Plan Tucson, Pima County is Pima Prospers, and they're looking to adopt those next year. General plans then have to go to the voters. So this will ultimately be in front of the voters. But what these do is they really establish how our community is planned. The work that I did at Sun Corridor really demonstrated how important it is and how transportation and land use are really intermingled because it's important for us to establish where things go. You don't want a smeltering facility right next to a single-family residence neighborhood. I mean, that's an extreme example, but you want to make sure that you're establishing your employment centers in the right place that makes sense. And we have great employment centers. We have, you know, everything in and around Tech Parks, Arizona on the southeast side. We have a great employment center in and around the airport and Raytheon. We have downtown as an employment center. We have Williams Center as an employment center. We have these established employment centers, but it takes planning to make sure that those are in the right areas. And it takes planning to make sure, again, that we're not putting industrial uses up right next to a single family home or an apartment complex. And so these plans and making sure that we are all active participants in how this planning moves forward is critical to the future of our community. And so, you know, all these meetings are happening, and I know it's sometimes difficult. You and I are paid to go to these meetings. We are expected to be there. But we still need businesses to attend these meetings. We need individuals that want to make sure that we are growing and prosperous and our future is prosperous, actively participating in these meetings. And so there's going to be a lot of discussion. There's going to be a lot of chances to do that between now and next year.
And that brings up the point of, you know, jumping in, of getting involved. And we know there are folks that have time and appear at many of these meetings. And they tend to be those who are not really big on the idea of this community growing.
That's right.
But we were at an event yesterday held by the Bale Chamber of Commerce where we talked about people are coming to this region. Arizona's an in-migration state. More people are leaving other states and coming to Arizona. And whether you want growth or not, it's showing up on our doors. So we have to really put the time and effort into these plans. And sometimes I think they may not understand some of the detail. Any chance you can give a couple details on some of the things that are in the plan that people need to be thinking about?
Well, what I can talk about, Ted, is, you know, what I really appreciated about the exercise that we went through, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, Imagine Greater Tucson, that was really an effort to change the conversation from, do we not grow? Do we grow? To we are going to grow. So how do we make sure that we do that in a smart way? And so that then leads to, again, making sure that we are addressing infill like we should. So one of the specific things that is going to be discussed pretty heavily in these conversations is infill development. And we've seen examples like Sunshine Mile, which is the stretch of Broadway between Euclid and Country Club, where we had a chance to increase the heights, to pull back some of the setbacks so that larger, whether it's apartment complexes, larger condo units, that those could be supported and grown so we have a much greater density.
And that's Michael Guyman with the Tucson Metro Chamber. As he's talking about, let's get involved. A lot of issues we didn't get to talk about, Michael, so I'm going to have you back after the RTA board gets a plan in place. I want to come and have you talk about RTA next and the importance of that to this community. But thank you for all you do.
And thank you so much, Ted.
For all of those of you who've joined us today listening, I hope you stay on. And as Dennis Prager will be up following our show, you've been listening to Jump In Tucson, KVOI 1030 The Voice, local news and talk.